November just gets really busy, and then what? Guess what? December gets busier. But today's Halloween, so we want to tell all the parents out there and grandparents, keep an eye on those kiddos, keep them safe, let them have fun trick-or-treating, and again, just be careful. Of course, this is general election time, and we have a new display down at the Randolph County Historical Society. We pulled out some very old brochures, posters, tickets to different conventions and things like that for people to see. So come by, look in the window, and if you have time, why, come on inside. Of course, it's Veterans Day on November 11th, and we'll honor veterans and commemorate the 100-year anniversary, the end of World War One in 1918. There will be a program at VFW, and after the Veterans Day Parade. And also, the Randolph County Ministerial Alliance will put on a celebration on Sunday, following that date at the 4th Street Theater, and they're going to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One as well, and the time for that's 5:30 to 7. Now, we're also going to have a new display after the elections at the Historical Society, and we're going to bring out some of the old memorabilia that we have from World War One. So please come by and take a look at that. And then, of course, we'll have Thanksgiving this month, so it gets busy.
Very good. Okay. Well, our subject is going to be World War One here this morning, and we'll welcome Gloria Burton to the program in just a moment.
Hi, this is Kathy Austin on behalf of Macon County Republican Central Committee. Statistics show that only 50.2% of voters in Macon County voted in the midterm election in 2014. This midterm election is critical. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Ben Carson said that 29 million evangelicals stayed home in 2016 and did not vote. You can make a difference in whether this nation, state, and county move forward or backward. Vote Republican on every level on November 6th. Keep Missouri and America strong.
Paid for by the Macon County Republican Central Committee, Jane Thompson, Treasurer. The Moberly Masonic Lodge invites you to their annual Soup and Chili Dinner this Saturday, November 3rd from 11 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. An $8 donation includes homemade soup or chili, cornbread, dessert, and drink. Children under 6 eat free. Support the work of the Moberly Masonic Lodge, located at the corner of Rollins and 4th Street in downtown Moberly, by attending their annual Soup and Chili Dinner this Saturday from 11 to 2:30. Carryouts are available, or for delivery, call 660-651-4258.
Why do I want to retain Judge Jim Cooksey? Because judicial experience matters, and he has it.
He has 19 years experience on the bench.
Because of his community involvement with Boy Scouts, Big Brothers Big Sisters, MACC, and his Presbyterian church.
That's important, and that's why on November 6th, I'm voting to retain Jim Cooksey as my Associate Circuit Judge.
I'm Jim Cooksey, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Randolph Countyans for Judge Cooksey, Sherry Cooksey, Treasurer.
We've got a lot to cheer about. Why would you not support the Thomas Hill Energy Center with America's natural energy resources? How do you argue with your 401k finally doing good? How do you argue with the lowest unemployment in 50 years? How do you argue with Randolph County having the best financial audit they've had in 15 years? To continue successful programs that enrich all Americans, vote Republican. Paid for by Randolph County Republican Central Committee, Ted Sander, Treasurer.
All right, J.W. Ballinger, we'll let you introduce our guest and our subject matter here
okay.
today.
Okay, today we're going to remember the end of World War One and try to say that three times. known as the Great War, we're going to discuss some facts that were somewhat unknown or have been forgotten. We're going to talk about the effects of the war on Randolph County. My guest, Gloria Burton, is going to be here to talk about one particular family whose lives were affected by World War One. So let's get started. Here are some facts about World War One that listeners might not have known or have forgotten. We really tried to stay neutral in this war. We wanted to stay out of Europe's war. And that was the popular feeling. And our president, Wilson, worked really hard to keep us neutral. But because of our relationship with Britain and with France, we did get into a little hot water with the Germans and the Central Powers. And that got us into it. Here's how it happened. Even after all the fighting and deaths, World War One was somewhat inconclusive, but it did mark an end of an age for the U.S. as well as some other world powers. The U.S. did become a world power after the World War One, joining Japan, Russia, Britain, and France. And all these countries then began to be willing to show and use their power overseas to change things. In World War I, over 9 million people died during the war, and another 20 million were wounded in some way. The resulting peace would sow seeds and spark another great war in the 30s, World War II. Entering the war, March 15th, the merchant ship Falaba was sunk with the first U.S. citizen being killed in that attack with submarines. On May 15th, the Lusitania was sunk, and that had 128 U.S. citizens aboard. After some sinkings by the submarine crews, Germany actually made reparations to the United States for the loss of life and equipment and other things. But then, in January of 1917, they initiated what they called unlimited submarine warfare, and that included the U.S. The German ambassador was expelled in February of that year, and in March, three U.S. vessels were sunk by German submarines. On April 5th, 1917, Congress backed Woodrow Wilson's call for war against Germany. And by December of that year, a call for universal training was made, and a name familiar to many of us, General Leonard Wood, who Fort Leonard Wood is named after, called for a draft of eligible men. Was the U.S. prepared for this war? Simple answer was no. The U.S. Army was small and poorly equipped, for in 1917 it only had 65 officers and 1,120 men. Now, that wasn't all our protection. We did have a well-trained fighting force in the Marines, and there were 15,000 men there. But the U.S. had no serviceable aircraft for war. There was an insufficient supply of machine guns and a shortage of ammunition. Another familiar name, General John J. Pershing, is chosen to head the American Expeditionary Force, and this was based on his military prowess shown in the Mexican War. He knows that he must create a fighting force almost from nothing. The U.S. Army, in fact, had Springfield bolt-action rifles, but only had a few of them. They had no artillery, trucks, tanks, or mortars. And why was this? Well, one reason was that even before entering the war, companies like Remington, who we would know of, and Winchester, who we would know of, both made rifles, but they were being sold to the British. And in fact, Britain bought those two companies before we entered the war and were taking all of the rifles that they were making for the war overseas. Now, both these companies were repatriated after the war. As we go to war, by September of 1918, over 23,900,000 men had signed up with the local draft boards, including Randolph County. This also included American Indians and Black Americans who signed up for the draft. The first men selected totaled 686,000, and by the end of the war, the American Expeditionary Force had grown to over 4 million men, divided into three armies. In May of 1918, Americans were thrown into battle for the first time as General Pershing had held back and held on to his idea of keeping American soldiers together in groups rather than to include them in French and British Army groups. The U.S. used equipment from Britain and France, including tanks, machine guns, and aircraft, again because we had not had the industry to build those as yet. In fact, the American ace, Edward Rickenbacker, had over 26 German fighters shot down, but he flew in a French aircraft called a SPAD 13. American soldiers even wore the helmets issued by the French. Americans found that the trench warfare that they were involved in was very difficult and very different from what their training had been, which they had been trained for something called open warfare. One story told by a novice U.S. soldier is as follows, quote, "I shot six Germans sneaking up on me one night, and when daylight came, I was shocked to find I had shot the same tree stump six times." So in the dark and in the trenches, things were difficult, very difficult. While many Americans joined the war in Europe before the declaration of war, most of these positions were in non-military roles like the Red Cross or other medical programs. But there were some unique ways that Americans became involved in the war after we did declare war on the Central Powers. In 1917, General Pershing placed an advertisement in U.S. papers seeking female volunteers to serve in the Army Signal Corps as translators in France. These women were to be single, They had to be in excellent physical condition and had to speak French. There were some 7,000 applicants for the job. The women usually answered all the telephones in Europe and around the war areas and became known as the Hello Girls because they always began saying hello. The American Expeditionary Force became a superior fighting force and by July of 1918 had become a major factor in the Marne Offensive. By the summer in 1918, the American Expeditionary Force undertook both large and independent offensives, and they contributed greatly to the Allied victory. And we'll stop there for a break, and then we'll go on and tell about what Randolph County did.
All right. J.W. Ballinger and Gloria Burton in with me. It's History on the Radio, looking back to World War One.
I am Jerry Crutchfield, and I would appreciate your vote on November 6th as your Randolph County Presiding Commissioner. Regardless of your party affiliation, we are first and foremost Randolph County citizens. I will represent and listen to all residents of Randolph County. We are a team and must work together to provide the needs of our county. I will serve with integrity, honesty, and my conservative values. As your Presiding Commissioner, I pledge to be accessible and will listen to all of your concerns.
Paid for by Jerry Crutchfield for Presiding Commissioner Committee, John Richard Renago, Treasurer.
If you have hard water, the limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
Hey, it's Friday morning. You found a G-spot. Hey,
listen to what Gillis Leonard is really saying.
I had a great bong when I was a kid. We smoked a blunt. We smoked a joint. We hit the bong.
How can someone like Gillis Leonard, who openly admitted to breaking the law on his G-spot radio show, now ask you to elect him as a circuit judge? Is he still high?
By the way, I had a great bong when I was a kid. It was the Starship Enterprise. And where the bridge was where you put your pot in. And then underneath there was a little battery-operated motor. And then where the engines, you hooked hoses up, and you could sit on the couch and hit that motor, and it would shoot smoke to two different people. It was great, great, great bong, great bong.
Vote for a judge who not only follows the law, but respects the law and has helped the 14th Circuit Court win awards for his efficiency 16 years in a row. Re-elect law-abiding, law-respecting Judge Scott Hayes as Circuit Court Judge.
Paid for by Citizens for Judge Hayes and Martin Treasurer.
Macon County's in good hands with Alan Wyatt as our presiding commissioner. Alan Wyatt has led with integrity and honor, ensuring that we build much-needed infrastructure like new bridges, county park improvements, and a new jail, which has brought in more than $200,000 from other counties. This November 6th, let's keep Macon County moving forward. Let's vote for Alan Wyatt to be our Macon County presiding commissioner.
Paid for by committee to elect Alan Wyatt, Jill White, Treasurer.
All right, we're talking about World War One, and now we transition to Randolph County's involvement. J.W.?
Randolph County, like most of the country, really backed the President and Congress in terms of getting out the draft and signing up to go to war. The first contingent of men from Randolph County left for training at Fort Funston, I believe, on September 21st, 1917. The town basically shut down for the loading of the train of the people that were going to war. And the Monitor Index indicated that there were 15,000 people. Now, where did they all come from? Well, they came from everywhere, apparently, to see the soldiers off. There was a big program at the train station, and in addition to speakings, they had a band. But the Monitor Index indicates that there was a quietness about the event, with all those people and all those folks going to war. Several hundred people from Randolph County enlisted and they were drafted. It appears from the records that we can come up with that 30 of Randolph County's citizens died in the conflict, and their names are carved in the monument, the World War One monument at Rothwell Park, so I encourage people to go out there and to quietly look around that monument area and to say a little prayer for all the people that have served. That's what this is all about. This program is to honor the memories and the efforts that not only the people in World War One made, but in every war. So we're very cognizant of what they've done for us. I want to name some of the names, and then we're going to get into a couple of them a little deeper. But the names on the monument include Hilton, Olger, Halterman, Street, Stipp, Wilson, Pitney, Halley, McAdams, Morris, Epperly, Perkins, Miller, James, Myers, Cunningham, Stellan, Sayer, Nyes, Lewis, Strop, Solomon, Silk, Theodore Bazan, who was whose name appears on a lot of the American Legion efforts here in the Randolph County area, Irons, Hughley, Dunn, and Matthews. Now, there were two other names, and we're going to take those a little deeper in terms of Randolph County history. And joining me today is Gloria Burton, who has researched this family and the sacrifice they made in World War One, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about two more names that appear on that monument. Gloria, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. Tell us how you kind of got started in this.
My grandparents, Vera and Charles McGregor, are buried in Oakland Cemetery, and it's an older part of the cemetery. It's close to the statue of Abraham Lincoln. And I was out at the cemetery. It was the fall of 2016, and I just noticed there were so many graves that didn't have flowers or American flags. And I saw one grave in particular, and the gravestones were the type that they were flatter on the ground, like 12 inches off the ground. But there was a large peony bush growing up in the middle, and the leaves have gotten so large over the summer that you couldn't read the names on the graves on either side, right or left. And I started clearing away this leaf, and on the right it said Finnis Schooling, April the 11th, 1899 to May 19th, 1918. First Randolph County boy killed in action in France. Finnis was 19 years old. I continued clearing away the leaves, and the grave on the left said Clarence Schooling, January the 4th, 1894 to October the 26th, 1918. Last Randolph County boy killed in action in France. Clarence was 24 years old, and both brothers were from Clark, Missouri.
Okay.
I could not get these two brothers off my mind, so I decided to go to the Moberly Public Library, and with the help of staff there, we located their obituaries. I found that Finnis enlisted in the Army April the 16th, 1917. He was in the 1st Aid Corps, and he was first sent to Jefferson Barracks for training. After that, he was sent to the Mexican border, where he earned a bronze medal. From the Mexican border, he was sent to France, being among the pioneers of the American Expeditionary Forces. Finnis was tending to the wounded on No Man's Land, where he was wounded and later died from his injuries. No Man's Land is the ground between the two opposing trenches. The average distance was about 250 yards, which is about the size of 2.5 football fields in length. Clarence enlisted in the Army April the 27th, 1918. He went with a unit from Audrain County. He was a private with the 354th Infantry, 89th Division, Company H. After finishing his training, he soon went to France. Clarence was in the last offensive strike in the Battle of Argonne Wood. He was 24 years old. Finnis and Clarence were both doughboys of World War One. And there are several explanations of what the term doughboy means, but the name was first attached to Americans from the U.S. military operations on the Mexican border. Doughboy became the nickname for the troops of General John Pershing's American Expeditionary Forces. Foot soldiers in Pershing's Expeditionary Force traveled south of the border, and they ended up being covered in white adobe dust. The foot soldiers were called adobes or dobies by mounted troops, and they ended up being called doughboys, and the name continued into World War I for either infantry in the U.S. Army or Marine Corps.
Very interesting.
I still couldn't get these two brothers off my mind, so as you and Linda know, I ended up at the Randolph County Historical Society, and I wanted to know what they looked like. So you and Linda found, and I believe it was from a yearbook from Clark, their pictures, and you ran the copies off for me. The Margaret Miller chapter of DAR, which I'm a member, we purchase flags for their brothers through the Veteran Flag Project. And their flags fly on the Avenue of Honors. And tomorrow, the flagpoles are going up, and then the tags will be put on this weekend.
Well, that's great. Now, were there other brothers in the schooling family who did not go to war?
There was an older brother, Joseph, but he passed away in 1914, I believe.
Okay.
1914, before we got into the war.
Well, the Schoolings were a rather well-known family in Moberly. In fact, I think we've found a picture where they had a rest home over on Clark Street. So they would have been well-known. And, you know, Gloria, you and I, our memories of this have to be things that we were told, because neither of us were born
right
in the First World War. And my memories of World War One or people involved in it are basically around Tanny Hill Park. And, of course, before the post office was built, Tanny Hill was a park that went from Johnson Street all the way back down to the end of the block to the west. And there would be a lot of retired soldiers who would spend time in Tanny Hill Park. And they would do the things that we all hear about them doing, playing checkers, talk about their stories. I also recall, because I had a cousin and a great uncle who were in the war, talking about shell shock. And that would be the post-traumatic stress syndrome that you hear today. So we hope that what Gloria and I have done today kind of raise your memories about folks that you knew who were involved in World War One, and so that you'll remember them and also remember all of our soldiers and sailors and airmen that are currently serving in the United States. And please come out for the parade and all the events that are going on. Now, if we've tickled your ability to want to go study and research, my information was found in a 3-volume set of History of World War One available at the Little Dixie Regional Library. And as Gloria mentioned, there's a lot of information that can be dug into at the Randolph County Historical Society. And golly, that's just what we do almost every day we're open. As we get into subjects like this, somebody has a long-lost cousin or somebody that they want to check up on. And so school yearbooks are important, city directories are important, telephone books and things like that. And then we can dig a little deeper into cemetery listings and things like that. So there's a lot of ability to dig back and to find details out about people, don't you think?
I do think so, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a powerful story, Gloria. Thanks for sharing and doing your research on that.
Well, thank you for having me.
You got it. We've got about 30 seconds to wrap up. When are the Historical Society hours?
Well, that's hard for me because they changed them after I retired as president. But Monday, 9 till noon, 10 till noon.
Okay.
I've got my scheduler
secretary
here to help me
here,
out.
Yeah.
Secretary here. Tuesday, 3 till 8. And they mostly do genealogy on Tuesday. And so if you have interest in digging into your family history, come in on Tuesdays, and there'll be people there that will help you. There's very little cost to it. We might charge you for copies, but that's all. And then on Thursday, 1 to 6.
All right.
And then Saturday, 9 to noon.
Very
so
good.
Lots of time.
All right, J.W. Ballinger.
Thank you, Brad.
Gloria Burton have been my guests.
This is Robert Brandon, and I'm running for a social